Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. Our topic today is restaurants and some exciting new restaurants that are opening around town. And also, the question that I have wondered at is like, what makes one restaurant a hit and a place that stays popular year after year when so many others are unsuccessful? It's supposed to be one of the most likely businesses to fail when it started, new restaurants. Some of these places seem to capture something about our town that makes us want to keep going back. And I was wondering, well, how do you do that? And so I got a couple of guests here who have been quite successful in opening restaurants and are opening some new restaurants. And I want to explore that with them, find out what they're up to, what's coming, how they keep the place going, and take your questions. Anything about food and restaurants is on the table today. And I know my friends talk about food and restaurants constantly, so I think our listeners will probably have some stuff they want to say too. So I have two guests in the studio. Dylan Buchholz is a part owner of Humpy's, Humpy's is sort of taken over its local area there, also with Flat Top Pizza and Pool and Sub-Zero Bistro and Micro Lounge. And now it's working on opening Willowaw, which is going to be this complex of food and entertainment, which is going to be where the old Covenant House is. Thanks for being with us, Dylan.
Thanks for inviting me, Charles. Lovely to be here.
Great. And Lael Fairburn, both Dylan and Lael are old friends. She started Snow City Cafe, and then she was involved in starting Spinard Roadhouse, and now she's starting a new restaurant in South Anchorage, which based on your record, feels like it's probably going to be really popular.
From your lips to God's ears.
Right. So thanks for being with us, Lael. And you're sort of the curtain's going up pretty soon on this new place.
End of the month, hopefully. Yeah.
So listeners, if you have questions, we welcome them. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. Or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Lael, in figuring out what people want, and you're making this big investment in South Anchorage, what were the factors you looked at? I mean, there seems like there's a lack of most of our restaurants seem to be downtown, midtown. Maybe there's a gap out there, and there's lots of people with money to go out to eat. Is that part of it?
Oh, definitely. We think that South Anchorage is really underserved. They've got some great restaurants out there, just not a lot of them. And so we saw a real opportunity to go out there. And originally, we were going to bring Snow City Cafe South down there. And that's how we came, you know, it was Snow City South. And that was our plan, just to bring breakfast and lunch down there. But once we got into Roadhouse, it got exciting doing lunch and dinner with a full bar. So we decided to kind of mash it all together and bring all of it south, and we'll see how that goes. We're really excited. So we should be opening before June 1st.
So we have an article on the website from, I don't know if it was from the Anchorage Press or one of the TV stations, where they said it's Snow City for breakfast, Roadhouse for lunch, and Saks for dinner. I don't know if is that.
Yeah, that's something that how we've described it a little bit. So, you know, we're trying to do a lot of things, and I think we made it really complicated and challenging for us, but we just saw that there were a lot of things we wanted to do. We got really excited about all the opportunities down there. And one of the things is that we're bringing a coffee house. So, you know, before we opened Roadhouse and South, we took our team down to Seattle. Our architect, Catherine Call with Blue Sky Studio, and Joanne Asher, her daughter Sage Asher, and Shane, our chef. And we all went down there and just had a great time checking out places. Probably went to 40 places in 4 days.
Tough job, huh?
I know. I mean, research. And so we just kind of made notes of what we liked, and we couldn't really whittle it down. So we're doing a lot of things, and we'll see how it goes. We're really excited to see how this mashup works.
Huh. But it has to be pretty nailed down when you start, because you've come up with all these recipes, and you've got a team of people cooking them, people serving them, people who know how to eat. I mean, there's so many moving parts to a restaurant, and starting one from scratch seems like it's like a moon launch or something.
Seems like that, or, you know, producing a film. I mean, any sort of big project with lots of moving parts, with, you know, 100 plus cast members. You've got to be organized. You know, in hindsight, I could have been a lot more organized. But our team is awesome. And again, you know, as we were talking before, that it really is a team effort. And I am just amazed at how many managers that are working right now have been working long hours to try and pull this off. And I think they're doing a great job. You know, I left a bustling kitchen to come over here, mm-hmm. and training out on the patio. I think they're doing scotch training right now. So
scotch training.
I know.
So that means they're tasting the scotches?
They're tasting
and
scotches.
That's their job.
That's their job.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. I really
I have to
into the
explain
wrong
that to my investors. You know, yeah, I really have to go learn how about scotch.
Need some cases of single malt for that we can drink at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
All part of what we do for you.
Right. Well, I guess I know it's not all glamour, but we'll get into some of the other hard work as we go along. But Dylan, I've seen the construction cranes and the work going on across from Flat Top there at the old Covenant House building. It looks like a huge project.
It is a giant project, and we've been eyeballing that building for many, many months, almost a year and a half after Covenant House moved out into their new facility. And we kept dreaming and daydreaming, and then finally opportunity came forward with a nice partnership with Pfeffer Development and Salamatov Native Association out of Kenai. We were able to put together a development plan and really start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And we're just excited to be dealing with a building that's right across the street from our mothership, as we call Humpy's. Humpy's is going into its 21st year. And with Flat Top and Sub-Zero anchoring the west side of F Street, we're fortunate to have Willowa anchoring the east side of F Street.
So what all is going to be in there?
Well, it is kind of it's a question of what isn't going in there at this point. It's kind of a multifaceted urban destination. There's going to be we have a strategic partnership with Steam.Dot Coffee Company, so they're going to occupy some of the space. We have a small speakeasy version of Blue Central going in upstairs. And then we have Willowa, kind of Willowa proper, which is the larger portion and the overall scheme of the complex, which will have full service food and drinks and full bar and actually a performance stage. We're going to be able to clear out the hall, as it were, and have national acts perform on our stage. You know, with a capacity of around 800. So we're very excited about it.
Huge.
Well, it's a 14,000 square foot building.
Oh my gosh.
And
the paper said 7,000.
It did, but it didn't take into consideration the actual internal and second and third floors. We're going to have a rooftop patio as well that'll overlook Town Square, and we're very excited about that. I know Lael's going to have a beautiful patio out at South too. So I think Anchorage is a very fortunate with the new patio offerings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the 2 weeks a year when it's warm enough. Sorry if it's me being cynical. But so Blues Central was a restaurant, blues club that was there forever under the lights.
Right.
And was sort of pleasingly tacky. And then I guess they couldn't keep it going because, you know, not enough people wanted to hear blues. Or
I don't know if it wasn't that they couldn't keep it going. It's just after 40, 50 years of operations and the most current owner, Frank Dahl, I think he wanted to retire and he was hoping that someone would take it over. But as you've indicated, mm-hmm. restaurant and bar businesses aren't necessarily successful out of the gates. It's quite risky and quite expensive. So we were fortunate that he was willing to sell his liquor license to us and threw in the Blue Central name, and we thought, well, it'd be a shame to let Blue Central not kind of occupy this beautiful space that we're going to build out. So we're kind of looking forward to the next iteration of Blue Central as well.
Hmm. So you could have music in there, music in Willowa, and music in Humpy's all at the same time?
Yeah, well, we're going to try to focus on bigger events at Willowa. Humpy's has been doing live music every weekend, no mm-hmm. cover charge, pretty much for 21 years, and we're going to maintain the local live music there. Willowa is going to be more geared towards touring acts, kind of patterned after what you see down in Seattle and Portland with some of the venues down there.
Uh-huh. So kind of on the scale of the acts that are coming through Beartooth for their first taps.
Similar, although we're going to try to cross multiple genres, whether it's mm-hmm. country music, there might be opportunity for us to do some really cool blues and jazz, things that aren't necessarily being driven by the need to have a full house just to pay for the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so this is a kind of a category of music we're not hearing much of in Anchorage.
Yeah, and it'll be mixed up. I mean, we go where our interests lie. For instance, at the end of the month, we're doing Blues on the Green, the 10th annual Blues on the Green with Blues Traveler. So that's going to be something we're going to continue at Willowa. And then in July, we have a couple of national acts that are coming up for our Big Spawn concert series. So all of this F Street activity will be kind of built around Humpy's and Willowa.
Well, I want to ask both of you this question, but I'll start with you, Dylan, because we're already talking about this music aspect. How much of this is driven by the fact that you are into the music and you want to hear it and you want to have live music, and so then you have a belief in that, an interest in that, and fortunately it works as a business proposition, or is it sort of looking at it and say, well, the best way to make money is to have music?
Well, I think, I can't speak for Lael, but I probably would guess, we do this because we love everything about it, and we pick and choose, whether it's from a design standpoint, and Lael's got a great eye for design. We pick and choose based upon things that we would enjoy and that we hope that will translate well to our friends and to our family and to our community. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to live music, obviously, my interest in music is long and deep, and I love live music. But at the same rate, I can't be the kind of the arbiter of what people like, so we have to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, you got to have an ear for what other people are going to want to hear.
Sure, but yeah, music is key to the Humpy's brand, mm-hmm. and we're just hoping with Willowa we're going to be able to expand that to a bigger level.
Yeah, Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and my guests are Dylan Buchholz, who's just talking restaurateur Humpy's and those other popular hip spots right around Humpy's, of which there are now going to be even more. And Lael Fairburn, who is started Snow City Cafe and Spinard Roadhouse and now is starting the new South restaurant. And we welcome your questions about their restaurants and the stuff they're doing. The phone number here is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I know many, many people eat in these places and debate the food and debate all kinds of aspects of them. And so it'd be fun for people to ask you guys questions. So I was asking Dylan this question about to what extent is what you're putting out there just what you like, and to what extent is, like, I mean, I think we think about big investments, which these certainly are, that you do market research and you do focus groups and polling, but it sounds a little bit more like it's just your gut.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. You kind of find what appeals to you, and you hope that it appeals to others. There's a lot easier ways to make money than what we do. Our margins are pretty slim, but it's fun. It's really fun, and again, traveling and just dining around Anchorage, there's a lot of great places, and I really have always enjoyed eating out. And I always wanted to see how, take the best of what I've seen and put it out there for folks. I know when we started Roadhouse, we had a great team of Joanne Asher from Saks and her daughter Sage Asher. And we kind of hit three generations. And so just by chance, we hit, the young, hipper crowd for, Sage's age group, my age group with young kids, and eating out quite a bit because we're all so busy and just trying to fly between soccer games and mm-hmm. work. And then Joanne, who's, more of an empty nester. And so we all brought different perspectives to what we were doing and wanted to make our groups feel comfortable. And it seemed to have worked there. And so just trying to make what we do down at South to follow that kind of model where we're accessible to wide ranges of people, but it does come down to personal taste. Our team picked every aspect of what's going into that restaurant, the food and the decor and everything. And you just hope, you build it and they will come. That's there's really no special magic. You just kind of hope that what we like is what others like.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also this aspect of time and taste. And you're talking about the different generations. And as I think about the restaurants we're discussing, they wouldn't have really been around 20 years ago. That the way we live now is, that it's, having, ahi on the menu along with tater tots, along with grilled cheese sandwiches and tables without tablecloths and all that kind of makes sense. And like you're saying, I've stopped in there with kids between events, and I've also taken dates there. So mm-hmm. it's like got all these different things you can do. And it seems like that didn't really exist before. That's kind of something new that's now becoming more popular. And then maybe in a few years, there'll be something else. And so you've got to sort of keep up with what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Maybe restaurants got real. I don't know. It just feels like it fits more daily life, my big thing is that we're not a special event restaurant. We can be there for you for that type of event, but we want to be something that you can go to multiple times a week.
So it's your hangout, yeah.
Yeah, it's your neighborhood hangout. It's a community center. It's where you see your friends. Mm-hmm. But we're also busy now. That's kind of a cultural thing. And who's got time to buy groceries, cook groceries, you know, clean up. And so we do that for you. And, you know, people just like to get out and feel a part of something. And I think that's something that both Dylan's organizations and ours have done well.
But I mean, you could call that Village Inn or Denny's as well. But you can, I can go to your place and I can get fine bourbon and I can get some, you know, really special food too. And that mix, I think, is kind of unique and new in the restaurant scene now. Agreed?
Yes. I mean, I think that we just took fine dining and put it in an atmosphere that people didn't feel uncomfortable. And in Alaska, you know, you've got folks in Carhartts that are, you know, walking off a boat and they want to feel comfortable and get their great food and great drink, but they're not going to go home and change. Nobody, I mean, we all go to the pack in whatever we're wearing. So it's just, it's a casual environment, but we all have, Anchorage, I think, is especially well-traveled, well-educated, and we're excited about the latest trends out there, great food, great drinks. So.
And we don't feel, we feel like we can go biking and then go out to eat, and we want good food, and we've got the money for it. You know?
Yeah, and we want you to bike to our establishments, you know, and lock up your bike, come on in.
Well, and you're in Spinard, which is like the you know, Greenwich Village of Anchorage these days. So Dylan, I mean, the formula for Humpies, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the formula for Humpies is tried and true, which is a brew, a burger, and rock and roll. I mean, this is eternal.
Well, we'll throw in the seafood aspect of it as well. We go through thousands of pounds of halibut a year. But yeah, it really comes down to when Billy and James and Angie and their starting partners opened it, it was based around the idea that downtown Anchorage didn't have an alehouse, some place where you could tap into this, at that time, an emerging market for craft beer. And so Humpies was founded by, you know, by beer lovers, for beer lovers was the motto for many years and still remains. And we still remain one of the biggest tap houses in the state. But part of that, part of going back to what you were saying, Charles, is, you know, what Lael's done very well with her group and what we're trying to keep up with her with is the idea of creating kind of comfortable gathering places for the community and places where you will run into friends or people that you would like to become friends with, because we are also busy with our lives and it has become kind of a hub, a place where you can get out of your yard, get out of your house, especially in the wintertime, and be social and do it with a little bit more offerings on the menu, some unique things that you might see down in Seattle or Portland or New York, without having kind of lost touch of the local factor, and whether it comes to our managers or our staff.
But I love it also that, I mean, if you want to have a martini in a you know, an appetizer, you go over to Sub-Zero, and if you want to have like pizza and hang around with young people and play pool, you've got to sit with that. You've got sort of got it covered. You've kind of broken your generations up a little bit,
right? And on purpose, what we don't want to do is cannibalize ourselves. Being downtown and occupying, you know, essentially that whole corner of F Street, we want to provide, especially with Willow, an alternative. We think we do a good job with Humpies and Sub-Zero and Flat Top, but those are more bar-oriented. We're trying to create something that's a little bit more of an extension of Town Square.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's go to a call. Dennis is calling with a question about Blue Central. Dennis?
Hi. I am so glad to hear about Blue Central opening. I was in Phoenix when I saw it in the paper, reading it online, and it made my day because I've really missed that that venue there, even though the last owner of it did not play a lot of interest in it. But I'm a big blues fan, and while I was in Phoenix, I saw Joe Louis Walker last year, and he was up here at Blues Central, and I had a chance to talk to him, and he was hoping to get a chance to come up again. So there's one, and another I saw, it was Kim Wilson. He has been up a couple of times and was at one of the Blues on the Green festivals several years ago, and he expressed a big interest in coming back. And the third was Bob Corator, who owns the best blues club in Phoenix, the Rhythm Room. and he has an outstanding house band, and they do some touring, and he was mentioning it'd be very interesting to come up and
sounds like you've got some ideas for you, Dylan. Is it do you? I mean, is that a big part of what you guys do? Like, who could we get?
It will be. We're looking at Blues Central again as a smaller kind of speakeasy version, but because of the space, it's convertible enough where we can feature some blues acts on the second floor where Blues Central is situated. But we also have the Willowa stage, so we're looking forward to at least quarterly true blues concerts that'll occupy the whole concert venue.
Wow,
so
exciting, huh, Dennis?
Well, that sounds like a great improvement, because the big problem with Blues Central, of course, was it was too small.
Right.
Yep. It didn't have enough seating capacity, really, to hold, but the venue was so nice, and the Backstreet Blues Band started it all off out there, making more money on Sunday night jam than they were making during the week, so they decided to run the blues 5 or 6 nights a week. So that's what got it all started from the old Chef's Inn.
Thanks, Dennis.
Well, I wish you the best.
Thank you, sir.
I wish you the well. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. This entertainment aspect, I mean, it seems like you're a little bit in the role of like being our local cultural, you know, you got this, but do you view it that way, or do you just like, who's available and will they fill the place?
Yeah, well, and I wouldn't take any credit for this myself. Uh-huh. We have a great team, a promotional team, a booking acts for us. But essentially, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You strive to get some acts that you think will appeal to not just yourself, but to the community.
And you're going to be hearing from tons of people who say, "Well, get this."
You do. But it's if it were simple and easy, everybody would be doing it. So Anchorage has grown, but it's still kind of off the map as far as trying to get some of the touring national acts to come up here. It takes a 2.5-day turnaround, whereas they could be playing another big city within 12 hours.
Yeah, plus all the travel expense and everything else.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you both have mentioned team. And the number of people it takes to run a successful restaurant. It probably takes a management team, including as well as the team of people who actually operate the restaurant. Mm-hmm. Give me a sense of like how many people are involved. And one of the things that I've always wondered about is when you go to a restaurant and you get great food that's creative, that's interesting, that's new, and you have the feeling that there's like the single intelligence behind it, but then you know that there's a whole bunch of people creating it. Lael, how does that happen? How does that come about in terms of the way the system works?
Well, one thing that we just did very recently was we formed a management company that helps manage the administration of all three restaurants that we have. So someone handling community relations and marketing for all three restaurants, someone handling HR and payroll for all three, someone handling accounts payable for all three. So that's really helped us streamline a little bit and be more efficient with our time and our buying power. And then we have management teams per restaurant. Each restaurant has a general manager. Each restaurant has an executive chef. And then they all have supporting management. And then I think that's it. And then there's supervisors. It just kind of goes down the line. But so when you're talking about a dish,
it's almost like a military operation with all these different levels. There
are org charts, and we've had to get more organized. I mean, I'm definitely self-taught after over 17 years, figuring things out as we go and realizing that the more organized we are, the better we operate and the better we're able to deliver a consistent experience for our guests.
So what you see on the Food Channel, these chaotic restaurants, it's probably not going to be a successful restaurant.
You know, what I think makes an unsuccessful restaurant is not watching your money carefully because, you know, again, the percentages, you know, your profit margin is, you know, anywhere from 4 to 10%, you know, and maybe I'm sure there's outliers that are doing more than that. You know, one percentage point is a lot of money, and you have to watch that, and it can go really fast. 2 percentage points can go really fast, so you have to really watch that. You know, so we're just really diligent about making sure that we're watching those things. And then, you know, all the other stuff is obviously a given. You've got to provide consistent quality experiences each and every time. And I think that's what's challenging for us in our business is that you know, every dish, every table is an opportunity to succeed or not meet people's expectations. And so, you know, when anybody tells me that they had a bad experience at a restaurant, I'm always like, go back. You know, you know, you're training.
Maybe your server was just in a snotty mood, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, you're training a new cook, or there's so many people involved. I mean, literally it will be 100+ people operating South.
Really?
And to get them all trained and doing the same thing every time, it's challenging. And they're learning how to work together as a team.
And there's a lot of turnover, so they're constantly training.
Yeah. And so our chef creates a dish and they have to execute it, and our job is to manage that quality and keep on them so that they're executing it the way that he or she intended. And that's just hard. It's just, you know, it's human nature. We've got a lot of people.
So between all three restaurants, how many people do you have?
Almost 300.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it will be by the time South is fully up and running. Yeah, almost 300.
Yeah. That's a big business.
Yeah. You know, Beartooth, Moose's Tooth have about 500.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
And more to come.
More to come.
Yeah. They're opening a new place as well.
That's what they say.
Yeah. So Dylan, is it same? Do you have the same sort of organizational structure?
Yeah. And in fact, we were lucky to have Layla as a good friend. She actually shared some of the formula with us as far as this management company. We're going to launch that as well. It just makes sense to have that kind of efficiency and really that skill set, letting those folks worry about the business model versus executing it within the four walls of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lael's gave a very very convincing discussion on that. So we've adopted that model, and we think that it's going to carry us into the next 10 years, really.
So where's the cutthroat competition here?
I know. It's a big love fest, quite honestly, between you know, our group, and I think even Beartooth and Moose's Tooth, you know, they're all great operators. You know, people cannot eat at Snow City every day. I'm aware of that. So I, you know, it's just, it's fun this way, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes back to, you know, the long, deep friendships that we have. We all enjoy each other's company. Yeah. So when we go to each other's establishments, it's kind of like going to Lael's living room, really.
Yeah.
Because it's that comfortable for us. My wife and I love Spinard Roadhouse, and we're from we live in Rabbit Creek, so we're going to spend quite a bit of time at South.
Yeah.
I hope so.
We were talking before the show how we've all known each other for so long. It's like, okay, this is crazy. So, but when a new place opens, it's kind of in the same category. Don't you see your business going down? I mean, you mentioned, Dylan, you were worried about, you know, opening too many restaurants on the same serving the same market in the same place. And, you know, the Rustic Goat opened not that long ago, and it's been super successful. And I would say it's pretty comparable to Spinard Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Have you seen, like, both of you could answer that. Do you see that in the sense that there's a market of a given size, and so there's some competition, or does it just not seem to be an issue?
Well, I think it comes down to what Lael said. You can't just depend upon the customers coming to your establishment day in and day out. Everybody wants a little bit of variety. So, you know, if you model your business to be kind of a novel from what's going on next door or what your competition's doing in some respect, whether it's from the menu offerings or the decor or the neighborhood, I think the local operators have been very, I think, methodical about making sure that we're not just throwing things together without thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the thing that we do compete for is staff. You know, there just is not enough great staff to go around. And I think we all are trying to be employers of choice. And so that's where I'll stab in the back any day to get a good staff member. You know, I do think that Anchorage is an eating out town, and we haven't quite hit our saturation point. You know, Spinard Roadhouse's busiest day ever, you know, as of last year, I think was Beartooth's busiest day ever. And we're side by side.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of business to go around.
With how crowded these places are, I agree with you. There's room. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and continue just after a minute of music with our show about new restaurants and continuing restaurants here in Anchorage. My guests are Lael Fairburn of Snow City Cafe, Spinard Roadhouse, and the new and upcoming South restaurant, and Dylan Buchholz of Humpy's, Flat Top Pizza, Sub-Zero, and the new Willowa. And we welcome your questions about these restaurants or anything you want to talk about restaurants and food. The phone number here will be given out right after the break, so get ready with your pencil and give us a call as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Back with Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is restaurants. And we would really welcome your questions and comments about your favorite restaurants in town and how do they do it. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752. And you can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Lael, when we went to the break, you were talking, and my guests are Lael Fairburn, and I think I just gave your names, and Dylan Buchholz, and I'm Charles Wolforth. Lael, you were talking about the challenge of staffing and getting good people, and I get the impression that the job market is, you know, it's pretty hot these days, and you need good people who do a good job. Do you have to up the wages, or how do you compete for staff?
We try to make an environment that staff like to work in. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very accommodating of school schedules, work-life balance. So, you know, we start there. You know, we're very respectful of each team member and recognize how they're all integral to our success. We pay competitive wages. We offer health insurance. We offer 401k, at least at Snow City and Roadhouse, and we're hoping to add that later to South. We're really, you know, there's a lot of opportunity within our organization. You know, we're not corporate, so we listen to a wide variety of thoughts and opinions, and people, if they're go-getters, we're going to move them up our ladder. So we think that being local and an independent restaurant makes us more appealing. So that's how we try and make it work.
But even at that, you have to deal with a lot of turnover because it's jobs, mm-hmm. it's sort of entry level jobs, people moving mm-hmm. through. And so you have to keep training them and all that. Mm-hmm. So is that a major area where you control costs is to make people happier so they don't leave essentially?
That's our goal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a lot of turnover. It's just the nature of the age of our staff. You know, they're going to college and they're going to finish college and then they're going to go off and do things. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's grasses can be always greener and people want to try out new things. We're the beneficiaries of that being mm-hmm. a new restaurant. So we have a lot of people from a lot of other restaurants that are checking us out and seeing how they like working for us. So mm-hmm. Staffing is one of the biggest challenges that we have. It'd be so easy, you know, but it's not. And we've been very lucky. We've had some people that are incredibly loyal to us and have worked for us for a long time. And we are eternally grateful to them. And, you know, we're eternally grateful to the person that comes and works for us this summer, too. You know, it just takes a lot of folks to make these things run. And we're hoping to get the cream of the crop.
Yeah. So Bill has a question, I think, about wages and employees. Bill?
Yes, hi. That was my question she kind of addressed. How many of your 300-plus employees make a living wage that would afford them to raise a family or buy a house in Anchorage?
Yeah, and let me add into that, like, how does the minimum wage issue affect you?
You know, the only staff members that make minimum wages in places like ours, I think Dylan can say the same thing, are servers. And our servers are bringing home $50,000 to $60,000 if they're full-time employees, if not more, you know, like something around
sure.
that.
Because of the tips.
Because of tips. And back-of-house employees, you know, they're making probably anywhere from $12 to $17 an hour, and you can debate whether that's a living wage or not. That's the market wage right now. But, you know, we are providing health insurance with that, and I don't know what else.
Dylan, is a minimum wage law going to affect you guys and make your life more difficult?
Well, you know, as Lael said, you got to count your money and make sure you manage your money well. And the minimum wage aspect is kind of, I'm a full proponent of the minimum wage escalation. Mm-hmm. You know, but what it comes down to from our operations is it does come down to having quality people that can afford to work for us. Mm-hmm. And so we make, like Lael said, the back of the house folks that aren't necessarily tied into the tips that the servers and the front of the house folks enjoy, we have to make sure that they're taken care of in a way where they can continue to work for us. And so when we talk about minimum wage, you know, most of our employees are the servers that are making minimum wage. But if you extrapolate what their tip take home is, it is beyond a livable wage by any standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you're going to like $15 an hour minimum wage, here it would be, we'd be having $30 Eggs Benedict, you know, it'd be a community thing. You know, we would all have to raise our prices in order to survive, you know, just survive to accommodate something.
Yeah,
like that.
And I think that is happening in some of those communities where mm-hmm. they've gone to the high minimum wages. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for the question, Bill.
All right, you're welcome.
I'm curious, we've talked a little bit about how popular your restaurants are, and I'm interested in how you manage popularity to sort of keep from destroying the experience, right? And part of that is, you know, if there's a really, really long wait. And I'm looking at you, Lael, about breakfast at Snow City. Tried to eat breakfast there recently, and they said, well, it'll be an hour. And I thought, I'm not going to wait an hour for breakfast. So how do you deal with that? I mean, it seems like you want to be popular, but at the same time, you want to make it so that it's not impossible to go there, right?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely something that we struggle with. You know, it's a blessing, obviously. We went to a reservation system. We used to have this thing call ahead and put your name on the list. And that was really challenging. We thought it was great, you know, and people loved that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would call ahead an hour before, wander down. They'd be at the top of the list. They'd walk back to a table. But you know, not everybody understands that system. You know, the person that walked in a half an hour ago and sees this person walk in and go straight to a table, they don't get that. And they understand the term reservations. They get that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we tried to get, you know, being downtown, we're obviously getting a ton of tourists, and they're going to pack our place in the summer. And we're like, well, we need to make it year round. So we need to make sure our locals don't forget about us, find a new favorite spot. So that's why we instituted the call ahead wait list. That's why we instituted the move to reservation system. And I'm hoping that by offering Snow City's breakfast on Southside that we can, you know, relieve some of that pressure. I know that Bernie from Bernie's told me, you just need to jack up your prices so that you cut down on the number of people that want to go there. And so I just couldn't, I know that logically, I don't even know, maybe that makes sense.
I think that's called introductory economics, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I just couldn't quite go there.
Uh-huh. I guess it's not so much, a bar, you want as many people in there as possible until the fire marshal clears the place out.
Well, yeah, and you know, we have the same kind of problems, especially in the summertime, because Humpy's is, you know, right down across from the PAC and Tenina.
And it's kind of famous. It's in all the travel guides.
It's endured with a pretty good reputation mm-hmm. for providing not just an array of beers, whether local or from around the globe, but also, you know, our seafood. We specialize in local seafood for seafood in the summertime when it's in season, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But and as Lael can tell you, you know, once you've reached a kind of a momentum with people packing your place, it is hard to move food around. It's hard to keep for the chefs and the cooks and the servers to keep up with everything. So, you know, we struggle with that every year, you know, we're always fine tuning as best as possible. We hope that with our new venture across the street, we'll at least have some overflow capacity over there.
Yeah, that's gonna be a big place.
It won't have the same menu as Humpy's, but it'll have some offerings that I think will appeal to locals and visitors alike.
How do you feel about what's happened and the impression that's developed about bar break downtown and violence and crazy stuff that's happening. You know, you're running a bar, and that's got to make you a little bit nervous, huh?
Well, it does and it doesn't. It makes me nervous as a member of the community. As an operator, I think there's great operators, and then there's operators that perhaps need some education or maybe some more experience. The bar break issue is a very real issue. I think it can be pinpointed to a certain handful of operators. I think that the Anchorage Police Department and the mayor's office and the assembly are well aware of who those operators are, and hopefully they'll take measures.
They're serving people who are already intoxicated, do you think?
Well, I don't know if it's so much over serving. It's just kind of not creating an environment that makes the average citizen feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, when Humpy's was one of the few bars downtown that had a big crowd 21 years ago, it always operated with a very capable and professional yet friendly security force. Even though it wasn't a nightclub, it was still operating with best practices then and best practices now. And we make sure that not only do we not overserve as a policy, but we also make sure that we don't invite chaos into our walls, because those will overflow into the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Hometown Alaska. If you have questions or comments for my guests, Lael Fairburn of Snow City Cafe, Dylan Buchholz of Humpy's, the number here is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So you're both opening big, new, expensive businesses. And that means you've got to find investors, and you've got to get loans. And these are major operations. I mean, the Willowa is going to really remodeling a huge building, and you're building a new building, right? Mm-hmm. For South. What do you have to convince? How do you convince somebody to give you that kind of money to do that kind of operation? And I don't think we've told people exactly where South is going to be, too. Let's start with that.
We are next to Lowe's at O'Malley Old Seward.
And it's a brand new building from the ground up.
And JL Properties is actually the developer of that building. And about 2 years ago, they asked us to be their anchor tenant. So that was really exciting. I had been looking for a long time in South Anchorage. How do you get people to give you money to do it?
Track record, obviously.
Yeah, track record. People love to be a part of a restaurant. You know, what I've seen is, you know, I tell them, I mean, not everybody has as many investors as I do, because most of my investors are my friends. And we just kind of talk about places we would wish that were in our community. And they've just participated and said, hey, we'd like to be a part of that. And so it really wasn't that hard for me to raise the money for my restaurant from an investment perspective. From a bank perspective, you know, and we started Roadhouse it opened in 2009, but we were looking for financing in 2008, and that we watched credit just dry up in front of us.
Right,
you know,
not the right time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really crazy and kind of stressful. And there was a local bank that didn't want to talk to us. They didn't even, we couldn't even get an appointment, because they're like, we don't do restaurants. So, you know, I think the economy has really weathered well up here, and so we really didn't have that hard of a time talking to banks. And also, we had a good track record, and we had good friends in the business that helped point us in the right directions.
Mm-hmm. Dylan, same question for you, because I mean, this is a big project. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of money involved, and you mentioned some major players.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky on the development side, like Lael. We had some pretty heavy hitters working on the acquisition of the building itself, and the core and shell build out. That's something that fortunately we're not having as an operator to shoulder.
Did somebody have the idea, here's a building, then let's go see if Humpy's wants to be in there? Or did you guys look at it and say, we want that building?
Well, we wanted it. By the time we were working with Benchmark Construction, our contractors, to really make a move on the building while it still had the for sale signs up, we found out that Pfeffer Development had already put an offer on the table. Mm-hmm. Just so happens that Mark Pfeffer shared a common employee with my daytime job is as an attorney with Pentlarz Law Group. And so that common employee put Pfeffer Development together with the Humpy's folks, and we kind of ran with this plan, and hopefully we'll be open mid-June. So
yeah, these things take a lot of people and a lot of complexity. Marilyn has a question or a comment. Marilyn?
Oh, yes. Well, it's not quite a question, but it's I was wandering around my neighborhood, which is Airport Heights, recently with my dog, and I found out that Fire Island Bakery is going to open up a little bakery in our neighborhood.
You're very lucky.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm jealous.
I'm so happy. I can't tell you because I love to, I walk to my yoga class, I walk to church, and now I can walk to coffee and pastry.
Yeah, yeah. And you're going to be, just like the folks in the South Addition downtown, you're going to have a terrific little local bakery in your neighborhood.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. And Dylan, I just figured out for sure that Thelma Buckholt must have been your mother.
Indeed, yeah. And unfortunately, she's no longer with us, but I was certainly thinking about her during Mother's Day.
Well, yeah, I can imagine so. Well, anyway, good luck to you guys in your new restaurants. I've been to all of them, and I'll come to the new South, the new music venue there.
Willowa, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Uh-huh.
She brings up something new that's happened. We all have been in Anchorage a long time, and we didn't used to have these little places like Fire Island Bakery or
Rustic Goat
or, you know, the coffee houses, all the different places to meet. It feels like people are a lot more interested in community and human scale stuff and going someplace where they see the same faces and where the people are making their food. Things have really changed that way.
Yeah, for the better, I think. I mean, it definitely adds to a community. I think that we add a lot, and those places definitely add a lot. And I think Anchorage is evolving, and it's exciting to be a part of it.
Yeah. So tell me about, Snow City sort of started that way, I feel like. I mean, it started as a...
Thank you. I appreciate you. And I mean, that was definitely our intent.
I mean, there's a real personality behind it. And it also felt like somebody was starting a business who, I mean, it didn't... I mean, now you're starting a place that's, you know, big, beautiful, has the solar panels on the front and all this stuff. But then you were just sort of starting out something that you didn't necessarily know how to do, right?
Oh, no. I guess I had a year that I worked at Humpy's. So for Billy and James, I was their very first non-owner manager. I worked at Diane's restaurant for 2 months, I think. You know, their cafeteria.
Yeah.
So that was my extent of my experience. I thought, you know, I'll open a restaurant. How hard can it be? And it was obviously extremely challenging and humbling. And so that was 17 years ago. We bought it on February 9th. My whole family went down there and cleaned the place, and we opened the next day, February 10th. And we bought Legal Pizza, and I had one cook and myself.
That got out of business, right?
Legal Pizza. Well, we bought it for, you know, a small amount of money. Uh-huh. They were operating 11 to 2, I think, Monday through Friday. So they were just a lunch place. And so I didn't have the infrastructure that I needed to do what I wanted, which was breakfast. So we had to operate as Legal Pizza and make some money. And I think we made $330 our first day. And it was just my cook, Harvey, and myself.
And you're saying, how much did I just pay for this place?
Exactly. Yeah, it was an eye-opener for sure. But we opened up a can of chili, and he made pizza for the first time. And we just kept the doors open, and I just made slow, steady improvements until...
So you're just a group of people running it yourselves. Well, how did you get from there to I mean, what was the key to building it up into what it is today? How did that happen?
You know, we tried to do a lot of things, you know, and I'm hoping that I learned my lesson in some way, but I'm kind of going back to trying to do a lot of things. But when we stopped doing dinner, because we didn't really execute well and consistently, we stopped doing dinner at Snow City, and we just focused on breakfast and lunch. And that's when I think that we were able to focus and refine. And I just learned how to be a better manager, you know. I was trying to be everybody's friend at the beginning, and I learned that has its own challenges.
You have to be a little tough.
Yeah, and so we just kept going from there. We were always popular, but not always financially solvent. And you know, my mother and father came in and gave me some money along the way when I was like, I don't think we're gonna make it. And so you know, just those early years, like the first 5 years, were a big learning curve. And so anyway, we learned from those experiences and grew 3 times. We expanded in our space 3 times and just got better and better. And I think again, staff goes where it's successful. You know, good staff. You can't find good staff to work in an. It's hard to find good staff to work in a new place that's slow because they need to make tips. They need to make money. And so, as you get more successful, you get better staff, which begets better guest experiences, and so it just goes on and on.
I have a question in it, which is totally politically incorrect. But
this is, take this one.
But this is my observation, and I'm not going to name any names. And I'm not talking about either of your places, but I have gone into some restaurants where you look around at the service staff and you think, everybody here looks like they came out of they're models. I mean, everybody looks so beautiful and so perfect.
And you're not talking about our places?
Yeah, I'm very disappointed.
Well, I'm just trying to avoid casting any aspersions on anybody in particular, but it just seems to me like, are you allowed to just hire people based on their looks?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And it's, the lawyer,
the lawyer says no. As an operator, we try to hire the best experienced staff person that we can, and so we have a very diverse group of employees and of various cultures and ethnicities and what have you, and we think that really is an aggregate of our community that we strive for that kind of diversity in our employees. And I think I believe Lael does too.
But it's not just me. That's obviously happening.
There are places where you wonder and you think, and
it's not possible. This is not a cross section of humanity.
Right. It's almost like they transplanted that restaurant from somewhere down in the lower 48, and the employees came with it.
Right? Yeah. Well, okay. Here's the next question. Again, politically incorrect. When you're hiring staff and somebody comes in with a lot of tattoos and piercings, does that affect your decision, or either like it's Snow City positively or somewhere else negatively, and thinking, oh, this person doesn't look like what we want?
You know, we just are having that experience at South, because I think people have joked that it is a prerequisite at Snow City that you've got to be tattooed or pierced. And we actually got a very negative letter a couple months ago about, that does not appeal to me, said much more negatively.
Apparently appeals to everybody else. So
we're working on a culture statement for our restaurant group. We had a bunch of staff and management get together and talk about who we are and what drives our company and what makes us successful. And one of them is we embrace the individual. And but then we're down at South and we're like, well, it's kind of a different thing. And we had someone come in with some really interesting looks. And we're like, oh, I don't know if that's going to go in the dining room, if that's really going to play well down here. And then we just kind of revisited our culture statement and said, no, that's who we are. And, this is who she is. And she's very qualified, and we're going to run with it and hope that, our clientele is as accepting as we are of the diverse group of people that are there to serve. As long as they're good at their job, we're happy to have them.
That's how things change, right? You give them a chance. We got a call now who is, I believe, Van Hale from Marx Brothers. Thanks for calling, Van.
Hey, Van.
Hi, Van.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
I've had my restaurant for 36 years.
You're one of the masters, Van.
What's that?
You're one of the masters.
I know. We're not worthy.
But you guys were talking about tips. And in my policy for, all the years, my staff front of the house makes great tips. In our staff in the kitchen, $15 to $20 an hour. But they're the ones that put out the food. And what we do is we share, the front of the house gives so much to the back of the house because everybody feels part of that restaurant.
I think that's a great model. I think it's a great model.
Well, I've got you all here. And there's been, there's an article in the New York Times about, let's get rid of tipping. That it's, we like to be able to give a little bit more, a little bit less, but frankly, I never feel comfortable. So somebody is not totally polite or didn't do everything just the way I want. I don't want to stiffen for their pay, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that tipping really makes a heck of a lot of sense anymore. What do you guys think? Dylan?
It's hard to change kind of that cultural value that folks have, going to a restaurant as a young child, here in Anchorage. My parents would tip, And, you know, I started tipping when I became of age to start going to restaurants. And it's really hard to disabuse people of that of that societal norm.
Well, and it's also a whole part of the dining experience. As you get getting to the end, you want to show off by you know, there's all these different cultural things around tipping.
Sure. So,
But it doesn't sound like it's fair to the staff, unless you're doing something like what Van's talking about, which sort of defeats the purpose of it being a reward, right? If it's shared to everyone, it's not an individual reward.
No, I think it's a great system, because what it's saying is, I mean, not necessarily tipping in general, but tipping the way Van's doing it, if you have a system of tipping, is that it's a team effort. You know, the front of house is dealing with the guest and, you know, delivering a great experience for that guest. But the food came out of the kitchen where people loved that food and made sure that it was wonderful. And so, you know, it's nice the way he does it communally like that, and it creates a great team.
So, do you guys see some servers who are getting tons of tips and others who are not, and look at that in terms of their quality of their performance as workers?
Definitely.
Yeah, we kind of pool all our tips together. You know, I got, you know, I only have three on the floor plus myself plus a hostess, and what happens, we have an expediter. So the expediter and the staff, they'll pool their tips together. The hostess gets so much, and the kitchen gets so much out of that. Then they split the rest with the three on the floor.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, we're always trying to fine-tune our systems to make sure that there's equities from the front of the house to the back of the house and management.
Right. But every restaurant's different. You just got to do, you know, that's just what we do. And, you know, it makes everybody work together as one. That's always been my philosophy, you know what I'm saying? And so... You guys have great restaurants.
Thank you, Van, as do you, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're sort of the model for everyone in this town. It's the first real fine dining restaurant in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we only have time for a little bit more, but I'm interested in the question of quality control and how you find out if people are happy. I mean, do you just count on them to complain if they're not, or do you have a way of knowing how things are going?
Well, we certainly have various sources to find out how people are doing. Most of our customers aren't afraid to announce what made them happy or unhappy. Mm-hmm. So it's either in person on the floor with the manager or the server, or certainly there's a lot of internet websites that'll let us know after the fact whether they had a good or a bad experience. And we take stock of all reviews, and we take stock of all input and try to reassess how we can better our customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a system of tasting our food daily and, you know, specifically have a calendar of what we're going to try this day, or if we've had a complaint, we go back and taste that and we rate it. And then we obviously pay a lot of attention to our comment cards. We get stacks and stacks of comment cards. We catalog them and we review them at management meetings, and we take complaints very seriously. And that's just my biggest thing for any guest, to try and let us correct a problem at the time, because we want the same thing. We want you to have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Don't be embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed, and we're going to fix it for you or take care of it in some way so that you're leaving happy. And it's hard when they come to tell you later when you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you, and thank you for a lot of great meals. It's been a fun hour, and I've really enjoyed having you. Lael Fairburn from Snow City Cafe and opening the new South Restaurant. Dylan Buchholt of Humpy's opening the new Willowa. Thanks to both of you for being here. Next week, Kathleen McCoy is going to be your host here on Hometown Alaska for a show on identity theft. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Grace Bojean is our production assistant. Monica Gokey is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.